Welcome to Amici, news and insight from the New York Judiciary and the Unified Court System. I'm John Carr. Today we welcome to the program the Honorable Edwina G. Mendelson, Deputy Chief Administrative Judge for Justice Initiatives. Judge Mendelson runs the Office of Justice Initiatives and is tasked with directing multiple court programs aimed at narrowing the justice gap and increasing access to justice. She is also in charge of juvenile and adolescent justice initiatives, including the implementation of recent legislation that will gradually raise the age of criminal responsibility in New York State. Judge Mendelson is a court of claims judge serving in the youth part of the New York County Supreme Court and a former New York City family court judge. She has three advanced degrees from the City University of New York, a law degree, a master's degree, and a PhD in criminal justice. Judge, thanks for joining us. Could you just start off by telling me what the new Office of Justice Initiatives is, what it's designed to do, what its mission is, and how it came to be?
Hello, and thank you for speaking with me about the new Office for Justice Initiatives. Let me provide a bit of history. So I am the third Deputy Chief Administrative Judge to lead and promote our court system's efforts to increase access to justice. First, Judge Juanita Bing Newton pioneered this work for us by directing the very, very first Office for Justice Initiatives from 1999 through 2008. When Judge Bing Newton became Dean of the Judicial Institute, Judge Fern Fisher became the statewide director of our court system's newly named Access to Justice program. And she continued the work of Judge Bing Newton, the great work of Judge Bing Newton. Under Judge Fisher's leadership, the Access to Justice program grew in a marvelous way. New York State is now considered a national leader in promoting access to justice. So it's a great personal privilege to me to continue this important work. We resumed the original office title, Justice Initiatives, to make sure I am able to continue the office's dedication to improving access to justice, and it also permits me to engage in other important court system endeavors.
It sounds like the mission is excellence, and it sounds like that meshes with Chief Judge DeFiore's Excellence Initiative.
Absolutely. The plans that my team and I have for the Office for Justice Initiatives fully aligns with our Chief Judge's Excellence Initiative. The mission for OJI is to ensure meaningful access to justice for those passing through the doors of every single New York State civil, criminal, and family court, regardless of income, regardless of background, and regardless of special need. Every program and project within OJI is aimed at improving the experience of litigants who appear in our courts. So we're trying to enhance meaningful access to justice. When we do that, we ensure a fair and just court system. That's promoting excellence.
Now, as you mentioned, the Access to Justice program has been around for a long time, and most recently under the leadership of Judge Fern Fisher. How again, is OJI different than Access to Justice, or just encompass it with other components?
So Judge Fisher retired, and she was a wonder. I like to consider the work of the Office for Justice Initiatives Access to Justice Plus. We're fully committed to continuing our current Access to Justice programs. Indeed, we're trying to increase our presence and our impact throughout all 62 counties of our state. So our expectation is that anything new that we're doing in OJI will also improve access to justice for New Yorkers.
I see. So it's the same end goal, really.
Yes.
I know from the website there are at least six ongoing OJI programs, and why don't we run down each one of them? You can tell me what they are. Let's start with community outreach.
It's estimated that 1.8 million New Yorkers navigate our state courts each year without a lawyer, and likely there are millions more with legal needs that never make it to our courthouse. Community outreach enables the court system to educate community members about how our court system works, and it also allows us to provide information about resources that are available to assist community members with their legal concerns. We host, we provide speakers for, and we participate in various public community events and Law Day celebrations. We also hold periodic trainings for community leaders and public librarians to help them provide information to the people they serve about the court system. We are looking forward to partnering in community outreach efforts with Mary Kornman. She's the new OCA Director of Public Affairs.
Mm-hmm. I've met Mary. She seems terrific.
She is.
Court Help, what's that all about?
So I'm very proud of Court Help. It's a popular website that our office created and maintains. It can be found at www.nycourthelp.gov. Court Help provides legal and procedural information in many areas, including court case basics, consumer law, criminal law, family law, estates, housing, name change, small claims, appeals, and collecting judgments. The website is written in plain language. We aim it at a 5th to 7th grade reading level. That's the level at which the average adult reads. In 2016, this website had over 4.5 million page views. It's quite popular.
Oh, it sounds like it. Holy cow. And what do the court navigators do?
So navigators are trained volunteers. Many of them are college students. They assist people to make their way around the court building, and they also guide court users to social services and available legal assistance. Court navigators are now available in some of our housing courts and in one of our civil courts to assist with consumer debt matters. We've had many requests to try to expand this program to additional courts, and we are hoping to oversee expansion throughout all New York districts.
If someone's interested in becoming a court navigator, how should they proceed?
Well, we have information about that on our website, and they can contact us at 646-386-3200.
Great. Do it yourself, I am somewhat familiar with, but why don't you explain how that works?
So the Office for Justice Initiatives develops and maintains the court system's DIY, do-it-yourself, form document assembly computer programs. These computer programs lead a court user through a series of questions and, based on the answers, produce personalized court forms that are ready to serve and ready to file. Once again, they're written in plain language, and we currently have 25 programs in use. They are in use in civil courts and family courts for many different case types. And many of the programs offer content in Spanish. There's also a popular program. This, along with the Court Help that I'm bragging about, is also a popular program. In 2016, there were 138,000 do-it-yourself forms produced.
Wow. So it seems that if for a lot of people, they could work their way around the courthouse or the court system with a little bit of guidance.
That's exactly right, and it's our office's mandate to provide that guidance and help.
Speaking of, what are the help centers?
So, we have help centers throughout the state. Help centers provide free legal and procedural information to unrepresented litigants in the courthouse. Our help centers provide one-on-one consultations with the court employee. We provide referrals to targeted, helpful assistance, and we also provide written explanatory materials. Those materials, some of them are office drafts, rights, and maintains, guides for various case types, including small claims and housing. Many of our help centers provide even additional assistance, more than that. They provide free internet, do-it-yourself terminals, or assistance from other partner organizations. This is important. We do no income screening. Anyone can walk in and receive the assistance that is available, and we provide assistance to all parties in cases. In 2016, our help centers assisted nearly 215,000 unrepresented litigants.
It sounds like the court system is making a real effort to be user-friendly. I mean, no one goes to court because they're particularly happy, usually. Usually it's there's some dispute, some issue, some problem, and it sounds like you're trying to make it as painless as possible.
That's exactly right. That's our goal.
And how do the volunteer attorneys work into that?
So our office recruits, trains, and supervises volunteer lawyers to provide legal information, advice, and representation to those who are disadvantaged by income, age, or disability. In our legal advice program, volunteer lawyers meet with the court users and they provide advice-only type legal consultations. Those programs run in some of our civil courts, our housing our document preparation programs, volunteer lawyers prepare court papers for litigants, but they don't actually go to court with them. And we do that in uncontested divorce matters. We also have lawyer for the day programs in some civil court consumer debt matters and in housing court proceedings where some courtroom representation is provided. This is known as limited scope. It's also called discrete task representation. The lawyer and the client sign a retainer agreement. The lawyer files a limited notice of appearance and explains the nature and limits of the case representation. And that case representation begins and ends that very same day for that court appearance. Our office also works with seasoned attorneys and with soon-to-be attorneys. We encourage participation of retired attorneys who work as volunteers in our Attorney Emeritus Program, and we encourage participation of law students and law graduates in our court-based programs through student practice orders.
The Attorney Emeritus Program, that's for retired attorneys?
Yes, it is. It gives them the opportunity to volunteer entities like legal services programs and other areas where there is great need.
One of the other things I know you're in charge of, which I think is going to be kind of a big chore the next few years, or a big task, is implementing the recent Raise the Age legislation. I know that's being phased in over a couple of years, but could you just give me a rundown on what happens when?
Well, this new law, in my opinion, is long overdue. New York has prosecuted 16 and 17-year-olds as adults for their alleged crimes since the 1800s. So, in terms of the new Raise the Age legislation, under the new law, the presumptive age of juvenile responsibility will increase for 16-year-olds starting next October 2018, and for 17-year-olds, it will be October of 2019. At full implementation, almost all misdemeanor and nonviolent felony cases involving young people aged 16 and 17 at the time of their alleged offending will be heard in New York's family courts, and they will be heard as juvenile delinquency cases. The cases of 16 and 17-year-old adolescent offenders who are accused of committing violent offenses will be heard in a newly created court called the Youth Part. The youth parts will be housed in Superior Criminal Court and presided over by family court judges. The youth part will also address juvenile offender cases for those aged 13 to 15 who are prosecuted as adults because of the very serious nature of their charges.
Now, these cases have got to go somewhere. I know they're going to family court. It sounds like the family court judges are going to get a whole lot more cases and a different population than they're used to dealing with. Is that correct?
Responsibility is something that our court leaders and our court community members advocated for quite some time, and we're all quite pleased about it. Until this law passed, New York was only one of two states in our country.
And the other being North Carolina, as I recall.
That's right. And we beat North Carolina. We did it first. They did it as well. New York and North Carolina had 16 as the age of adulthood for criminal justice purposes. Former Chief Judge Littman in 2011 first publicly advocated here for raising the age in New York. So it's true. To answer your question, it is true that many family courts throughout our state will have significantly more cases resulting from this new law. However, there are available provisions in the family court system for pre-court diversion. That's called adjustment. It's not available today for 16 and 17-year-olds under the current law. And this adjustment process will prevent many of these cases from ever reaching the family court. And it's true that family court judges have not traditionally presided over criminal cases involving older adolescents. But please remember, family court judges are quite experienced in addressing other matters involving 16 and 17-year-old adolescents who appear in the many other types of cases that family court traditionally handles.
They sure are. Could you explain a little more about that adjustment process?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with that.
Adjustment is a process. It's a pre-court process. Departments of probation offer services to young people who have been arrested for misdemeanors, basically, or for family court cases. And it is what happens in the adjustment process is the Department of Probation tries to work out a situation where the case doesn't actually have to go to family court. Mm-hmm. It's a diversion. It's a provision of the possibility for referrals for social services or other services to keep the cases out of court in the first place.
Okay. Is it too early to say whether or how many, whether we will need more family court judges or how many?
It's a little too early to say, but we are going to be monitoring the situation quite closely. The unified court system is in deep planning mode for this new law. Chief Administrative Judge Marks convened a statewide Raise the Age Implementation Committee. That committee is chaired by Michael Kokoma, who is Deputy Chief Administrative Judge for the courts outside of New York City, and I also co-chair it with Judge Kokoma. So we are working with our administrative judges, our supervising judges, the Division of Technology, the Office of Policy and Planning, the Office of Family Violence, the Judicial Institute, court managers, and many others in every district to plan for this new law. Judge Kokoma and I are also providing guidance and support to interdisciplinary Raise the Age committees throughout the state. In terms of New York City, I will be leading the court processes work group with the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. So that's an interdisciplinary Raise the Age committee that I lead here in New York City.
Okay. So it sounds like you're going to be ready to hit the ground running in October of 2018.
Yes, and we've been planning, and we are being very careful about our implementation of this new and very important law.
It was a long time in coming, as you well know.
I agree.
Let's take a step back. How and why did you end up in this role?
That's a good question. It's one that I ask myself on occasion. I began my legal career working as an advocate in housing court, then a family court lawyer, and then I spent most of my judicial career in New York City Family Court, first as a court attorney referee, then a judge, then supervising judge, and then I was administrative judge of all of New York City Family Court. I had, after doing all of that, a strong desire to return to the courtroom full-time instead of doing administrative responsibilities. And at the end of 2015, I was able to serve in the youth part of New York County Supreme Court criminal term. I currently still preside over a calendar of cases involving juvenile offenders aged 14 and 15 who are charged as adults, and I also preside over a calendar of adolescents in the adult criminal justice system through age 19.
Wow. So from all that experience, where do you see the court system, or maybe it's the society, falling short?
Well, in terms of, and this explains why I'm excited to do this work. So I've been serving in the youth part, and believe me, that has helped me in terms of how we are thinking of and planning for the Raise the Age implementation. But the other aspects of my new exciting work in the Office for Justice Initiatives also challenges and excites me. And I couldn't resist returning to this court leadership role in a policy role. I'm gonna quote from our chief judge. Chief Judge Janet DeFiore recently made some remarks upon receiving a really prestigious award, and these remarks resonate with me. And I'm quoting directly from her. She said, she spoke of the, and here's where I quote, the almost unimaginable good fortune to have the opportunity to spend each and every day of your professional life working to make a positive difference in the lives of people across the state. And I get to do that very same thing, and I get that very same unimaginable good fortune. So, I answer your question about how I got back into this position of leadership and answer your question about where we fall short. Because this new role helps me to try to make our court system better and the world better, quite frankly. Where we fall short. In every area I've worked, I've witnessed insufficient availability of community and social services that are necessary for basic survival and necessary to prevent harmful court involvement for parents, for children, for other adults, for older youth. As we plan for the impact of raising the age in New York, and we try to improve access areas. I have to recognize that so many who appear in our courts and seek help from our courts are living in communities of violence and communities of poverty. Many struggle with mental health challenges, substance addiction, financial insecurity, unstable housing. And many who appear in our state court system require support for collateral legal issues. And it's not necessarily directly related to their court case, but it impacts their lives. Immigration status and ability, housing, public benefits crises. Many of the young people who come to court have witnessed unspeakable traumatic events. Almost all of the young people I see are undereducated. They have learning disabilities, developmental delays, in addition to their mental health difficulties. And so here's where I think we fall short. I think we need a robust array of available social service programs and treatment opportunities to meet all of these concerns that I just described. The litigants who come to our courts seeking our help, they're competing for limited space in existing social service programs. And they're competing with other people who are in deep need of services, but who don't face incarceration or they're not facing the loss of children to foster care. And our court users are even competing with each other for these limited slots and programs. So I know that society's resources are not unlimited, but we have to make wise choices about deploying resources effectively, and we need to invest in preventive efforts to benefit all of us. So I'm excited to be in the Office for Justice Initiatives because we're trying to expand access to justice for everybody and address these issues.
You mentioned preventative measures, and I think what you're saying is deal with the problem early and prevent the crime, deal with the problem early and prevent the homelessness, deal with the crime early, or deal with the poverty early and prevent it from morphing into more difficult issues. Is that right?
So well said. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make.
Wonderful. And that's a wonderful place to end up. I so appreciate your time this afternoon, Judge, and I wish you all the best of luck in your new role. Thank you for listening to this edition of Amici. If you have a suggestion for a topic on Amici, call John Carr at 518-453-8669 or send him a note at jcaher@nycourts.gov. In the meantime, stay tuned.